Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am James Anderson. I'm going to be your host for the next few months. As always, we're brought to you by WinBet, and I'll be having a lot of my friends from the industry on over these next few months. We'll be talking a lot of prospects, talking a lot of dynasty, talking some redraft for 2022 when we get a little closer to that time. But I thought there'd be no better first guest for my first off-season podcast than my old buddy Ian Kahn of The Athletic. Ian had a really good fantasy baseball season this year. Took down AL Labor, I believe. And Ian's as good as they come when it comes to dynasty baseball. So, Ian, thanks so much for being on the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good, partner. It's good to be with you. And I'm honored to be your first guest on the offseason. I'm sure that you're going to be bringing on a lot of great people. So, honored to be hitting leadoff this year.
Hell yeah. Where did you hit back in your playing days?
I hit third mostly. Third or fourth. I was pretty good back in the day. It's a long time ago, but yeah, third or fourth.
Nice. So yeah, I mentioned you took down Labor. Was that kind of the big score in terms of leagues people have heard of this year for you?
Yeah, I'd say that was the big win. I also, fortunately with my partner, Robert Mershak, we won, a league called Dynasty League One, which is, a league that I've been in for a very long time and fighting it out with Alex Cushing, and finally just passed him with 5 out of the last 9 years, either Cushing or myself has won the league, and finally just passed him 5-4. So I feel pretty good about that. And it was a ridiculous ending, came down literally to the last at bat. Playing Rabbi Ari Sunshine, who's as good a fantasy player as he is a rabbi. But it's a good industry league, some really good players in that league. And Devil's Rejects, which we play in together, ended up 3rd out of 20. Just couldn't get the pitching. Wilson Kerman and I, we just couldn't get the pitching at the end. And numerous other leagues. But it was overall a very good season. But Labor is definitely the one that will be most memorable.
Nice, man. That's really cool. Do you have any just kind of immediate sort of takeaways, whether it be from Labor or just those dynasty leagues you mentioned, in terms of kind of heading into the off season? This is something that's really going to kind of stick with you as you look ahead to 2022.
Yeah, I guess Labor would be the one. And I took a different path with it this year. The year before, I was trying to repeat in Tout Wars, and I lost on the last day to Ariel Cohen. I don't know if you remember that, but I'm sure I called you and just cried in my cried in my coffee about it. Basically, I called him up in February as the season was getting started, and I said, "Hey, listen, man, you beat me last year. It was literally in the last day we tied, but he won on the tiebreaker." And he had lots of thoughts. He was like, "Yeah, you're a really good player, but there's a lot of holes in your game." And I was like, "Well, I don't know. Okay." And he really described some things to me that I could get a lot better at in terms of auction strategy, because I never really had much of an auction strategy before this year. It was just sort of like, all right, these are the guys I like. These are the players that I want to get, and let me see if I can get it. And so I really like studied. Like, I was like, all right, Ariel, teach me. So he did. And over the course of the off season, February and March, I really like dove into this idea of value and getting value where I can and figuring out where the value lies in different spots. And it was the key to winning. And, you know, it was pretty significant. I had 110.5 points out of 120. So I kind of had it in hand in July and held on. And it was because I had more at bats than everybody. And I had more innings pitched than everybody. So I think that that's, especially in an only league, something that I took away is just, you got to get at bats and you got to get innings pitched. But also in a 15 team league, the same thing. Like, you know, the old thing that Tim McLeod taught me when I was first starting the game is like, you can't do any better than getting counting stats. So it was just about finding guys who were getting consistent playing time. So I would say that on the AL side, on the only side. And one other thing about labor and playing in only leagues, what I found was I have a passion for looking at lineups and also box scores the next day, but I really, you know, at 5 p.m. when all the lineups are typically out, I really look at those lineups because you can see what a team feels about players on their roster by how they choose to put them out there. Right. So like one guy was, it was the Indians. I seem to get a lot of Indians in AL labor this year. Like I would just keep cycling them in. There was Owen Miller who was getting a lot of time for a while. And then I noticed that Yu Chang was starting to get some at bats and he went 3 for 3 one day and then hit a home run the next day. And I was like, all right, I'm picking up Yu Chang because they're going to give him a chance to play. And they did the last 2 weeks. Didn't do that much. But again, it's just really understanding how the psychology of the manager is working towards these players. So I think that was something that I kind of clued into more this year than ever before.
Yeah, I mean, that's extremely valuable advice. Chasing plate appearances, chasing innings. I mean, that's something that I've still got to get better at, and definitely in 15-teamers. I mean, I think in 12-teamers, I've maybe had more success just because you're analyzing skill a bit more than you are playing time, because pretty much anyone that you're starting in a 12 teamer should be playing close to every day. Right.
And unless you're in playing an only league and then it's half of that, but yes, definitely 12 team for sure. It's more about skill than playing time. Cause you're right. Everyone's getting playing time.
And then you get to those 15 teamers and you have that and mixed leagues, you kind of have that feeling of like, you know, I know this guy's probably not very good, so I'm going to maybe look past him or not do a dive on him because this guy wasn't a good prospect. This guy's just, you know, he's probably not going to be that great. But if you wait too long, like some of those guys that broke out on the Cubs after they entered their rebuild,
sure.
Like if you don't, you know, roll the dice on one of those guys early on for a buck, when it seems like they're playing every day, you know, you're not gonna end up with them. So that's something that I think, you know, a lot of people could improve on. And when you look at a lot of the teams who are doing the best in, you know, whether it's TGFBI or in some of these NFBC leagues, they're usually right up there in terms of overall plate appearances in the overall format. And
TGFBI, I should say, I ended up fourth in my league and I think 67th overall with 106 points. And that was a tough TGFBI league. Ariel was finished third, so he won a dollar bet for me, which is not so much fun. I'm not going to enjoy that. I'm doing the Beat the Shift podcast tomorrow night and he's going to talk all about that, I'm sure. TGFBI is a big place. TGFBI is fun, man. How did TGFBI go for you this season?
I finished 19th in the overall. I was up around 10 for a good chunk of the year, kind of fell off down the stretch. Brian Rudd from Baseball HQ, who's kind of been my nemesis in that league the past few years, we seem to always just end up in each other's league. And I probably had a good like 30 point cushion on him at one point earlier in the year, if not more than that. And he just kept grinding and grinding and grinding. And over the past couple months, we'd been kind of neck and neck, and he passed me for good about a week ago. And, you know, Rudd's a great player.
Well, if he beat you, he's a great player. I mean, James, your record in TGFBI, I think I'm sort of, I've done well. I think every year I've been in the top 75, but every year you're in like the top 20. So it's very impressive.
Yeah. You know, I that's probably the one thing I can like hang my hat on. But I'm worried that I don't know if they're going to still do those sort of overall rankings or not. Because if those go by the wayside, then I'm going to have to actually start winning some real leagues.
Not still there though, man. You're good. You're good. You know the game great.
Let's talk a little dynasty here.
Which is my favorite game, man. I mean, I mean, it really is the most fun dynasty. And one league that you dropped out of last year because you just had too many leagues, the Mocky League that DVR runs. Mm-hmm. It's turning into a really good league. Like, it's people are getting really good. And it's a fun, I just really like the setup of that league. And DVR won that league, and myself and Thomas Scott came in second out of 16 teams. DVR just took it at the end. But it's not a dynasty league, but it kind of acts like a dynasty league. And I am kind of leaning that way, that I think that the contract leagues, like a really well put together contract league, I might enjoy more than a dynasty league. I'm kind of leaning that way. Or do you have any feeling about that?
Well, I do auto new. I'm in a staff auto new league, which is sort of a salary cap league. But you can, in theory, keep players forever. Their cost just keeps going up like a little bit. Mm-hmm. Whereas the league you're talking about, guys have contracts that expire. So that's a factor. I'm in so many leagues that I just have so much on my plate during the season beyond managing my teams that I'm not as into leagues like that, just because you have to really put the time in on the trading front.
That's true.
I mean,
that's true.
You can't just sort of sit back and be like, well, I'm going to see how everything shakes out. And then kind of towards the trade deadline, I'm going to contact the rebuilding teams and make my moves then. And I used to have the time to just do a lot of that. And I was in fewer leagues and stuff. But I just, you can't, if you're not putting in the time on the trade front in a league like that, you're just not going to be as competitive as you need to be.
Yeah, that might be why I enjoy it so much, because I do like the trades and frees it up.
And you're forced, everyone's sort of forced to make trades in a league like that.
Kind of, yeah.
Because you can't just sit back, because you don't get to keep your guys forever. And if you have like some, like expiring Freddie Freeman,
or Frankie Montas. I grabbed Frankie Montas in a bunch of those type leagues at the end of the year. I just love Montas everywhere. And, being able to grab him on a 12C contract where he's going to have to go back. And so you can get him for, a decent prospect maybe, or a possible prospect, because, so I think that's probably why I think he just kind of hooked into what it was about that league. That was so fun.
I mean, I will say though, those leagues, I think they have a tendency to be, healthier leagues almost than some,
right.
some standard dynasty leagues,
because that's my point.
Because you can build an absolute juggernaut for a 2 to 3 year window, mm-hmm. but inevitably it's going to kind of come to an end, because your best players are either going to get way too expensive, or their contracts are going to expire. And those teams that are trying to rebuild, like if you're trying to rebuild in Devil's Rejects right now, like say you take over a team with a terrible roster, like it could be done. But
it's going to be 5 years.
It's going to be 5 years at least. And you don't have much margin for error. Like
right.
if you're trading away your old pitchers or whatever, for young players, like you really have to hit on most of those trades, and you have to be making really shrewd pickups on the waiver wire and doing really well in the first year player draft and stuff like that. So,
but that's my point, but that's exactly my point. So like this league that Cushing and I have been going back and forth on, we're going to be Rob's team. My team with Rob is going to be in the top two moving forward for the next 5 years. Maybe, I don't know about that. Maybe not. But we've been there for, I mean, I've been there for 9 years. Rob came with me last year. And sometimes it feels like dynasty leagues are a little, it just feels a little unfair. Because once you get that advantage, because right now in Devil's Rejects, there are three teams that we fought it out this year. So it was Luke Shatillion, myself and Wilson Karaman, and Greg Wellmeyer. And Greg won, right? Mm-hmm. But it was going to be one of the three of us. Like the three of us had kind of, and maybe I think Tom Trudeau just below that at four, he'll be ready to come back next year when Trout is better and Acuna is better. Because I think that was a big, huge, obviously losing Trout and Acuna from your team. You're probably not going to be able to pull it off. And Ralph Lifshitz's team is pretty good, but there are a bunch of teams at the bottom that I just don't know. I mean, how long is it going to take them? And whereas in these contract leagues, you're going to suffer a year, but that's a fun year to suffer because you can make all the trades to really build yourself up for the future. And then you'll have your time. You know, I don't know. It's just something I'm kind of coming to.
Yeah. I totally get that standpoint. And I mean, I think it really does make it more fun. I mean, any league's more fun if you're talking to, say, 75% of the league.
Yeah. Exactly.
Every couple months on some sort of trade talk, than if your kind of lines of communication are sort of limited to just, you know, three or four guys and you're maybe kind of spinning your tires. I mean, I totally get it. And I'm just kind of always struggling each off season. Like, I got to cut down leagues. Like, where am I going to cut? where am I going to cut the leagues down?
Yeah, of course.
Because I know, like, you know, inevitably I'll just end up being in one league that I didn't plan on being in, or something like that. And I don't know about you, but I mean, like, it really, I can tell, it negatively affects my in-season management if I'm in too many leagues where I'm like competitive and there are moves to be made. You know, like in a dynasty league, you know, if you're rebuilding or middle of the pack, like there are moves to be made, but there, you don't have to just be on the constant lookout for something necessarily. But like if you're in 12 redraft leagues and you're trying to be competitive in all 12, I mean, that's a good like 3 hours every Sunday just doing fab. And
yeah.
So it's just, you know, it's a major grind. And I'm trying to get better as a redraft player. I mean, dynasty will kind of always be there, but I'm trying to, you know, I think if I kind of almost have to pick, like, do I want to be in like 10 dynasty leagues, some of them contract, some of them not, or really just try to get better as a redraft player. And I've kind of chosen that lane in recent years just to try to sharpen that aspect of my game. But I mean, we've just got so many fun options in the fantasy baseball world. It's tough to pick.
Yeah. And it is hard when you have too many leagues. I dropped out of a league that I started 9 years ago and had commissioned for 9 years, my home league, my friends and family league. And I was like, guys, I just can't do it. I think if I wasn't the commissioner, it would be easier. It was a head to head league too. Like, it was set up in like 2012, 2011. But it's just too much. And then it becomes not so much fun. But one thing I want to say, like, one of the big things I've learned this year, again, in dynasty leagues and in keeper leagues, it's all about the waiver wire, man. It's just all about accruing value and finding guys. Like, Rob Mershak came to me in early April, and I think it was from you. And he said, we got to pick up this guy, Anthony Volpe. I was like, the Yankees kid? He's like, yeah, we got to, let's grab him. I was like, sure. Okay. And so we grabbed Anthony Volpe. So now we have a top 15 prospect on our team that we grabbed off the wire. So you don't have to trade. You don't have to make a big trade to get Anthony Volpe. You've just found him, especially at the beginning of the season, right? In March and April and May, these guys who are popping up. And it's like, you know, and a guy that you and I remember we drafted in RDI, maybe the second season in the first year player draft, Everson Pereira. Do you remember when we had Pereira on our team? And again, another Yankee, and we just grabbed Pereira off the wire, you know, and that's just so valuable. Just get, you know, stay awake on the wire from the beginning of the season till the end, because there are guys like, I picked up Carlos Hernandez everywhere this season. Loved him. Except for Devil's Rejects.
Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't get him in Devil's Rejects.
No, I'm going to tell you what happened because this is a good story. We had picked, you only get four pickups a week in Devil's Rejects. And that week, for some reason, we were like, we picked up guys Monday, Tuesday. We picked up like one guy Monday, two guys on Tuesday, and a guy on Wednesday. And then I was like, oh my God, we've got it. And then Carlos Hernandez, it was like his second start. And I was like, Wilson, we got to get Carlos Hernandez. I worked the phones to try to find somebody who would make a trade with me to pick up, so to just get an extra pickup. And I just couldn't get it done. And then you guys grabbed him and you and Eno grabbed him. And I was just like, it was painful. It was painful not to get Carlos Hernandez.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this was the best year that we're maybe ever going to have in terms of prospects. Or, I mean, Carlos Hernandez was a prospect for a minute at the beginning of the season, but then he graduated. But, you know, just young players emerging who were unrostered because of all the situation with the pandemic last year. I mean, it led for just the perfect situation for a lot of players to be better than we knew they were coming into the year.
Yeah.
And you're probably never going to see that again. It was just really the perfect storm. If you're able to add prospects in season in your dynasty league, if you were paying attention, you could have added 10, 12, 15 guys who finished the year as top 100 prospects just off the waiver wire. And I mean that's something that, you know, obviously is a game changer, because like in Devil's Rejects, like we're not as competitive as you guys are. I don't really think it even makes sense to do a full teardown in that league, but
I'm looking at it right here. You got Everson Pereira on the 22nd, which is actually another smart thing. When you see a smart player in your league pick up somebody, go take it, say, all right, well, why did he pick up Everson Pereira? Go pick him up in your other leagues, because that's just too good.
Right.
You know, you picked him up on July 22nd. I think we picked him up a week later. I think, you know, maybe it was me. I don't remember. Maybe I said, oh, James and Eno just picked up Everson Pereira. Let's go get him. I don't remember exactly how it went down, but I remember seeing you pick him up and us having him before. So it's just really like, watching what's going on. You picked up Jake Myers. Very nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point. Like, you should just at least be sort of scanning every week. If you're this is a league where it's first come, first serve. So you just kind of get the email that someone picked somebody up. But if you're in a league with weekly fab, you should at least be scanning those pickups every Monday morning and just be like, you know, make sure that no one's falling through the cracks that you weren't thinking about.
And then someone falls through the cracks, and then you can pick them up in another league the next week. It's great. Wow. Look at some of these trades you made. I'm looking at you getting Mitch Haniger and Logan Webb for John Means and Andrew Heaney. In the of April.
That was sweet. That was a Tom special. I hope he's listening.
That's a good trade. That's a good trade. Boy, that Logan Webb, who would have guessed?
All right, well, we will be right back, and we'll be talking about some more players, some guys that have given me some trouble on my upcoming Dynasty rankings update. But first, a message from our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more are at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head to WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down on blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 6 states: Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are endless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's WynnBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. All right, Ian. So I had kind of a list of guys who were giving me some trouble. I'm about halfway through my first Dynasty Ranks update of the offseason. This one will be kind of the sort of initial one, but the big deep dive one will be coming in a few months. I know that's probably how you operate as well.
Yeah, same.
I think the toughest guys, I mean, this isn't a shock. I mean, it's pretty easy to rank someone who we liked going into the year and had a good year, right? The toughest guys are obviously the ones where we either liked them coming into the year and they didn't perform up to expectations, or they were just kind of not even on our radar, or maybe just, you know, well outside the top 100 or top 150. And then they just had monster years. And then you got to kind of recalibrate and decide where guys belong. And one guy that I wanted to start off talking about, because I know he was on your AL labor team, is Cedric Mullins. I'm right about that, right? He was on
yeah,
that thing.
Yeah. He got him for $3.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't have Cedric Mullins on my top 400 coming into the year. So, like, this is a guy who goes and he could have been scooped up, I'm sure, in, you know, either in the draft or off waivers in plenty of dynasty leagues coming into the year.
Actually, I owned him. I picked him up last year in Guardian in Devil's Rejects in like August, and held him, and then he was on the cut line for me, and I ended up trading him before the season for Jacob DeGrom. Not just him. I traded Manaea, Baez, Mullins for DeGrom. Wilson and I did. And at the time, felt like a brilliant trade. And had DeGrom stayed healthy, we probably would have won.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's even if DeGrom had stayed healthy for like 30 more innings, you guys probably would have won.
Yep. Probably. Yeah, unfortunately. Or if he had come back, or it was, but it's fun. It was fun to have him while he was there. He was really quite good. Cedric Mullins. So, you know, I really just liked him. I like guys with speed, and we knew he was going to run. You couldn't guess that he was going to hit 30 home runs. I mean, there was just no way to guess that. But I did think that I thought there was a chance. The reason I got him in AL labor was I thought there was a chance he'd be the strong side of the platoon in Baltimore with Austin Hayes, and that maybe if he took off, he might stick. And he more than stuck, obviously. I mean, he was like the fantasy MVP.
Yeah, and so I mean, you're probably coming at this from a higher place than I was. You know, just the fact that you were interested in him at all, you're probably less surprised. And
oh, I'm still shocked. I mean, you couldn't expect this. This was $3. You're not going to get 30. I mean, what do you give like $35 to $38 worth of value this year? I think.
Well, how about this? If I'd said before the season, like, what are the chances that Cedric Mullins finishes the year as a top 100 guy for Dynasty? What would you say?
1%.
Okay. 2%. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. That was not in the equation.
And now that's what gives me so much pause here is, like, I think this is something that we sort of learn maybe more in Dynasty than in redraft, is that these sort of random pop-up career year type guys, like, I feel like those guys never get that due in Dynasty until they kind of prove that they are that guy going forward. It's not like Cedric Mullins was a 23-year-old who was a top 20 prospect for 2 years and struggled last year, but now he's clicked and now he's made good on that prospect promise. Like, this really was a guy who was just completely off my Dynasty rankings coming into the year, and now statistically there's this case that he's maybe a top 25 guy. I would say he's kind of on the cusp of my top 50 right now. Like, how much yeah. do you buy in on that?
Well, in my September, late August update, so I did an update right before the trade deadline in many leagues. I had him at 44. So I obviously was pretty keen to believe that it was really true. I think you gotta have him in that top 50 for me. Just the speed. It's all about the speed for me. I even if he doesn't hit 30 home runs again, I mean, his hit tool, like, he's hitting for average. I mean, he's really, like, I can't think of another player like him over the course of the last many years. Can you? I mean, a genuine 30-30 guy.
You know, he's kind of the player that 7 or 8 years ago I hoped Manny Margot would become.
Right.
That's still waiting on that one. But, like, yeah. You know, nah. if Manny Margot had, I think they're about the same age, actually. If Manny Margot had come out this year and put up Cedric Mullins' line, I'd be like, oh, man, easy top 20. I mean, maybe top 15, like, because it would have been my past bias of loving this guy, and it finally pays off. It's a little harder with a guy that you just weren't on to fully buy in, because I think, to me, like, the most frustrating thing with doing these Dynasty rankings is when I am late to buy in on a guy, and then I finally give him that push, and then after I give him that push, then he crashes back to earth and is the guy that I thought he was.
Right, yeah. I guess 44 is where I've got him right now, just ahead of Francisco Lindor and right behind Corey Seager. With Castellanos is in that area, Pete Alonso. I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking actually mid-30s for me. I'm thinking mid-30s.
Okay.
At least. I mean, I maybe even a little higher. I got to dig deeper into it because, I mean, I got guys ahead of him that, yeah, I have guys ahead of him that I would definitely move below him at this point. So, yeah, I haven't, again, you know, we should be doing this in a month when I've done my first after-season Dynasty rankings. But, yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. And the hard part about Cedric Mullins is next year in AL labor, he's going to cost $33 or $35, and I'm not going to get near him. I will not pay that. I won't pay. It's a bias of mine. Like, if I get somebody super cheap, I'm not going to pay his regular. Like, I got Robbie Ray in AL labor too, which is how the season went the way it did, for $4. And next year he's going to be $26. So I'm not going to get Robbie Ray.
Yeah, I think that's we're in lockstep on that philosophy of just, you know, it's not about doubling down on the guy that broke out for you the past year. It's about finding that next guy.
Yeah, finding the next guy.
So how about a guy on the complete opposite end of the spectrum? Like, if I told you coming into the year, All right, Ian, Cody Bellinger is going to have a really rough year. Yep. It's not going to be good. Like, you know,
what's terrible is I knew you were going to say Cody Bellinger. How about that? That's how bad it got. I knew it was going to be Cody Bellinger.
But, you know, just go with it. Like, I'm telling you before the season, Cody Bellinger is going to have a bad year.
Yep.
He's going to be healthy entering the postseason and stuff, or at least listed as healthy and everything. but he had a bad year. Like, yeah. How far could you see him falling on your dynasty rankings? Like, what would have been like a realistic low point coming into the year on Cody Bellinger?
You could not come up with a realistic one that's going to land to the level that he's going to land. I think. I mean, I just don't think so. I mean, I was scared of Cody Bellinger coming into this year because of watching that shoulder go out of place last year. And personally, having suffered a couple of shoulder injuries over the course of the last couple of years, and Tim McLeod always used to say shoulder injuries are the worst, right? Everyone says it, not just him, but especially for pitchers. But yeah, he made me nervous. So I was lucky. I kind of spared myself Cody Bellinger this year. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, does he still make your top 100 right now?
Yeah, it sounds like I'm going to be higher on him than you are.
Maybe like, 88, something like that.
You know, honestly, right now I've got him kind of in the 60-ish range. Maybe I'm just being stubborn.
No, I get it though. I mean, let me just see. How old is Bellinger?
That's 25? The thing. He's so young. He's so young.
Like, he's 26, yeah. I mean, 165 average though, bro. No stolen bases, like 3 stolen bases. So he's not running. He's not playing against lefties. I mean, I don't know. 94 strikeouts in 315 at bats.
I mean, look, if this was easy, I wouldn't have brought him up.
That's right. No. I you're right. You're right. You're right.
It's just, and I'm also like Devil's Rejects, like kind of inside a little bit. I'm wondering where I need to rank him so that I don't get an offer from Tom about like a month from now. Like, well, you had this guy ahead of him in your rankings, you know.
Like, no, what I say to Tom about stuff like that is don't that is not league dependent. But so like this is why what you did originally and what I did at the beginning of the season is so important. Because the rank of doing rankings both for teams that are competing and for teams that are not in the absolute hunt. So someone like Cody Bellinger for a team that's competing, you lower that number. But if a team is not in the absolute hunt that year, you don't want to trade Cody Bellinger. You want to buy Cody Bellinger.
Right. And that's where Eno and I find ourselves in Devil's Rejects. Like we're ninth, which is, I would argue in this league, you don't want to bottom out in this league. Mm-hmm. There's not really much to gain. You know, we're not getting into that top five mix by trading Cody Bellinger.
No, you're not.
Or something right now. Right. No. Like we're getting back into that mix if Cody Bellinger bounces back and is the guy that we thought he was like 2 years ago.
Absolutely. 100%.
But
you can't, but I wouldn't rank him based on Tom, right?
Because
that's not ridiculous. I'd do the same thing with Cushing, where he's like, well, you know, you have DJ LeMahieu at, you know, 102, and I'm asking for Gavin Lux, who you have at 108. So does that make sense? And it's like, yeah, but I'm still not doing that. And he said, well, you better change the ranking. I was like, yeah, you're probably right. I guess I better change the ranking. It's one of the worst parts about doing dynasty rankings is when people use your dynasty rankings against you in trades and then say, well, if you're not willing to do that, you better change your rankings. It's like, all right. Well,
right.
It's just kind of, it really is like where it is in the moment. But no, you can't trade. Here's like a big thing that I really do believe and that you and I used in practice as often as we could. Try not to sell low ever. The only time to sell low is when you have real roster crunches, right? So some leagues like that Mocky League that DVR has, there's no IL spot. So you have an injured player, you got to sell them, right? Because you need that roster spot to churn players and to put them into your lineup because it changes twice a week. Otherwise, a guy like Cody Bellinger, like if someone's coming to get him, I know it sucks because like he killed you this year. I'm not speaking to you, but I'm speaking to anybody. It sucks to have a guy like that on your team, you're like, I just want to get rid of him. Like for me, Joey Gallo hit 199 in DL1. And the one place where we almost lost the league was an average. It's like, do we trade? And I was talking to Rob about it Monday. Like, hey, man, maybe we trade Joey Gallo. And then he was like, yeah, I don't think so. Second year, you always say that Yankees are hard to play for. And second year, they get better. And then I was like, yeah, and also I'm breaking my own rule. Like, you don't sell low. Not on guys who have talent.
I mean, I honestly, I think this ties in. Like, one thing that I think has made me a much better player, like, over the past few years is to just eliminate emotion as much as you possibly can from making decisions on players. Like, there's just so many people out there who, you know, hate Cody Bellinger right now or hate Christian Yelich and think he sucks, who's another guy I wanted to talk about. And you can target those guys in trades and take advantage of the fact that they are really just kind of looking to move off of this guy.
That's what I would recommend. Like, that's what you do. Go buy guys low because their price is 70% of what it should be, because emotionally, not for everybody. I mean, some people, players are like that where they say, I'm not going to let my emotions get the better of me. But if you ever wanted Cody Bellinger, now's the time. Like last year, I traded for Ohtani in Devil's Rejects. And I traded for Ohtani in DL1 because it was the perfect time to buy him because he just looked like a mess.
Well, is it the perfect time to buy Christian Yelich right now?
Yeah, there's no better time to buy Christian Yelich right now. There's no better time to buy him.
And I think I'm going back to that well in redraft next year because I think the cost is going to be...
You're going to get him in the early third maybe, right?
I mean, I think maybe even later, fourth. I was thinking like fourth or fifth.
That's one guy I did not get away from. I got him and I took him in TGFBI with the 11th pick. I wasn't thrilled about it at the time, but I was like, all right. And Rob's a Brewers fan. So I was like, yeah, let's do Yelich. Didn't do a thing for us. I mean, he really suffered. But what is he, 31 now? Is he 31?
That 30? Sounds right.
Could be even 30. Yelich, let me just take a look. Yeah, no, Yelich is, you know, he's 29. I mean, he's not done.
You know, the thing I was noticing with him when I was looking at sort of how he finished the year, he got the strikeouts under control to close the year. Like, he had like a 24% strikeout rate on the season, but he was under 20 over the last couple months. And so that was kind of the first step to me was like, is he, because like in 2020, strikeouts are just through the roof. To me, the first step was like, you got to get the approach figured out. And then you can kind of work on trying to get back to that power game. And, you know, I don't think we've seen the last of Christian Yelich as a top 30 guy for fantasy.
I agree with that. And actually, James, if our league was still going, I would be saying, let's go try to buy Christian Yelich. I would not say let's try to buy Cody Bellinger. I just wouldn't. But I would say let's try to get Christian Yelich. And I think it's just I like Yelich's swing better and his approach better. Bellinger is more like that swing is just so much, much going on.
Bellinger is the bigger sort of leap of faith of those two for you.
And, yeah, I think so. And I think he'd be a lot. I think he's less expensive, though he might be similarly expensive because he's got 3 years less. But I actually buy in the Yelich, man. I'll buy Christian Yelich next season. When do you think he goes next year in a 15 team NFBC?
I'm thinking like the end of the fourth.
Oh wow, yeah, I'll try that. Sure.
You just have. I think it's going to be a good buying opportunity. Maybe I'm wrong about that. And I still think, you know, it takes some conviction to take a guy there who's coming off of like the 2 years he's coming off of. So it's not for everyone. And, you know, I just think it's.
But also you're a Brewers fan. You watch him all the time, right? What does he look like? What is his confidence? See, I'm looking at confidence. I have my background. For people that don't know, I've been an actor for 25 years, took a sabbatical a couple of years ago, right before the pandemic, which worked out well, started a new business in communications anyway. But I always look at the psychology of the player. I look because baseball is all about confidence. It's all about whether you think you're going to do well. Right.
Yeah. And I think, well, I can tell you the swing has looked gradually, it's like a very much an upward trajectory throughout the season this, in terms of how the swing's looking, how his bat speed's looking. I'd say confidence, we're still not quite where we want to be with Yelich, but I do think, you know, October has a way of changing that. A good off season, a good spring training has a way of changing that.
By the way, and I didn't mention this, I do a podcast at The Athletic called Under the Radar. It's part of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball podcast. And it's myself and our friend Derek Van Riper and Nando DeFino. And we've been doing it for about 3 years now. And we talk about this kind of stuff that we're talking about here all the time. I just wanted to put a little plug in there for the show. We just did our last episode of the season yesterday, and on that show I do a lot of Ariel Cohen impressions. So if you listen to Ariel Cohen on Beat the Shift, he's a good friend, and I spent a lot of time, and I put my acting chops to work. And so there's a lot of little fun Ariel Cohen conversations with George Washington that happen in post credit scenes like Marvel movies. Anyway, if you want to check it out, give it a listen. All right. So cool on Yelich. I'm kind of glad that we've talked about him now, because I'm going to reach out about him in a couple of leagues.
Let me ask you about a couple of other guys where they've just massively flipped narratives over the past like year or so. Francisco Lindor and Marcus Semien.
I knew you were going to ask me about Semien. I knew it. We had Semien. Remember when we traded with Justin Mason, we traded a fourth round pick for Marcus Semien. Remember that? That was fun. And then he had that great season. And then he had the down season the following year. I mean, let me throw it back to you on Semien. Where are you on Semien? Like, how much are you going to, I'm not going to go out and, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pay for Jorge Polanco, because I think that price is significantly less.
And I 100% agree with that.
You know, it's a similar skill set, dual eligibility in both spots, second base, shortstop. I think in AL labor next year, Semien goes for 33, and I think Polanco goes for 24. And we've seen Semien peak and then drop. It'll also depend on where he ends up. I think it being in that lineup was very helpful for him, you know, but if he's not back in Toronto, I think that changes things.
So one caveat with Semien, if the Houston Astros sign him, I might be in, because he's unlocked this pull side fly ball power that I was looking on Baseball Savant, and he would have had, if he just played all his games in Houston, he would have had 55 homers this year because of the Crawford boxes. And I wonder if Houston might be in on him just for that reason. They let Correa go, they bring in Semien, but you know, I'm gonna be off Semien most likely in redraft. And you know, I think I saw him maybe going in like the second round. Like,
I can't, no, that's, I mean, just, I, that's, I'm not gonna do that. I'm not gonna pay that.
But I think that's a great point on Polanco, because I think I saw Polanco going kind of, you know, middle round, like six rounds. Yeah,
right. Like, right. Exactly. Know? And he's not a top 10 player, but he's a top 20 player, top 25 player this year. What was Polanco at the end of the year?
I had that up somewhere.
I'm going to go for the cheaper version of a similar skill set with a similar second base shortstop combo.
Yeah, Polanco was 33rd among hitters.
And Semien's probably like 8th.
Semien is
5th, 9th.
And I'm using OBP actually for this, because that's what I was doing my dynasty rankings on. So
Polanco will go up, I believe. I believe Polanco's better in average than in OBP.
That's right, I think.
Right. Still good in OBP. But that's where you save a little bit of money. You save, so you get that second round pick. And I would not consider Semien in the second round, but I could be wrong. And whoever picks him in the second round, and if he goes and wins the league next year, or she goes and wins the league next year, God bless you, and I'm wrong. But that's my instinct. On Lindor is a perfect example of what I was talking about earlier about not selling low. We own him in Devil's Rejects. I'm not trading Francisco Lindor now. Just not going to do it. You know, I'm not going to go out of my way to
definitely couldn't have traded him.
Yeah, can't trade him. You just have to. You have to sit with him and trust this. Living in New York, the first year in New York is really hard. You know, I mean, you look at some of the emotional issues that he was having, And when Baez came over, I don't think Baez is coming back. That's for sure. Well, I say that, but I could be wrong. But, you know, he'll get more comfortable. And Lindor is just such a great player to have on so many fronts. But you gotta rebuild that value. That's the thing. This is what I say. Like, I know you hate Christian Yelich right now if you own him in the Dynasty League and you hate Cody Bellinger. You want him off your team. Fine. Wait till he does something good for a week. Then trade him. You just got to deal with him. It's just sitting there on your roster. It's like Tommy John guys. Same theory behind it. Like, don't trade your really good pitchers, Tommy John. Because let me share this. Can I share this? Someone like Mike Clevenger. I think I've said this on I know I've said this on other shows, but I don't think I've said it on the show. So Mike Clevenger, he gets Tommy John. Or no, Chris Sale. Let's say Chris Sale, because he finally ended up coming back. And I owned him in that first DL one league. The moment you have Tommy John, the moment it's said that you're Tommy John, someone's going to come and try to get him. And you're like, oh, go away. Screw you, dude. Leave me alone. I'm not mad enough. Right. And so you sit there. But then he's on your roster, on your injured list for 11 months. And he's just sitting there. What I like to do is, like, 6 months into them, having them sit there is when I try to go get him.
Interesting. That's because, I mean,
then the price falls. Like, first they don't want to sell because they're pissed, and like, you're trying to get over on them by getting them for cheap, but then they get tired of looking at them there, and they're like, oh, you know what, I'll just get some value for them, and then you can get a good player.
And it's the perfect storm if you can do this kind of mid-season while they're trying to compete.
Yes, absolutely perfect storm. And we just held sale. We held sale in deal one, all, and I wouldn't trade him. People were trying to get him. It's like, nope, not trading him. Because you know how much I love Chris Sale. I mean, I don't love him because I'm a Yankee fan and he's a Red Sox, but how much I love him in fantasy. And but no, don't sell low. Don't sell low. That's the key. And don't look, the other thing is, like, don't go all in. You know what I mean? Like, just don't. Because it's not necessarily gonna help you. You're not necessarily gonna get there. I don't know. I could be on the wrong page on that, but especially in a dynasty league. If you buy all the old players and give up all your young players for that one season, you're going to suffer for 5 years after that.
That's not how you build.
No.
And I mean, that's a good recipe for you ending up, like, leaving the league.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Years, you know? That's exactly what I was going to say. Not even. We're like, I didn't. Because then you've lost. You've lost the league. Like, I had somebody who bought Craig Kimbrell for me for, like, at where they thought they were ready to compete. This is 5 years ago. I'm not even going to mention his name. He bought Craig Kimbrell. It was the Japanese reliever for the Cardinals. What was his name? Do you remember? The closer for the Cardinals who had, like, two good seasons. Oh, I think his last name was Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yes.
Sung-Hwan Oh.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was Oh. And basically what ended up happening was, I got Jose Berrios. So this is back in the day. It was like Jose Berrios, Jesse Winker, and a first round pick. I then flipped Berrios. So it was 2016. I then flipped Berrios immediately for Aaron Judge. And then Satoru Oh lost his job. Or I don't think I said his name right. So sorry.
It's definitely not Satoru.
Right. No, it was the great Giants slugger I've traded. No. And then got Aaron Judge back in that trade, and that guy, nice man, dropped out of the league next year, the following year, because he had spent all this time and he's like, all right, I'm finally ready to compete. I'm going to do it. Be careful. Don't give up all your chips. It's not worth it. Build incrementally. It's a dynasty league. It takes time. It takes time. I made a ton of dumb moves, by the way, ton. Like, traded Wander Franco for Aaron Nola 2 years ago. Still,
I mean,
crying.
Yeah. I mean, that could be a different pod where we just cry about old bad trades we've made.
We you and I made a couple. I made a few. Yeah.
Back, I mean, you really, like, ask anyone who's played Dynasty, even someone who's played for a long time, like, they can tell you a recent bad trade they've made in no time, right?
Like, I mean, absolutely.
It's just gonna happen.
It's part of the game. It's part of the fun of the game.
I agree. Got anything you want to add? I know we gotta wrap up here.
No, we're good. We got another couple of minutes. I was able to move my 11 o'clock to 11:15, so I got a little bit more time.
Okay, well, Jared Kelenic. What do you do with him?
You buy him.
but the like, obviously, sure. Like, I mean, we would all trade for Jared Kelenic if the price is right.
Yeah.
I mean, Cedric Mullins or Jared Kelenic?
Ooh, that's so good. I'm going to hit it back to you. Cedric Mullins or Jared Kelenic? I think I'm going to go Kelenic. I think I'm going to go Kelenic there. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. It's really, that's a good one. That's a good one. No, I mean, that's not how I want you to buy him.
I'll be honest. I have Mullins on this tentative list I'm working on. I have Mullins two spots ahead of Kelenic.
Mm-hmm. That's so fun. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one right there. No, but like last year, the offseason was the year to buy Joe Adele, right? For sure. This year is another good year to buy Joe Adele. Keep buying Joe Adele. If you believe that Joe Adele is gonna be. But Kelenic coming off a 181 average, really struggled, but then started to turn it on over the course of these last 3 weeks, right? And started to get comfortable. You know, he's like a freshman in high school playing on the varsity. It's gonna take a little bit of time. But do you believe you're the prospect guy? You're a better prospect guy than anybody, as far as I'm concerned, and certainly better than me. What do you think? Is Kelenic, do you believe?
I'm mad at myself for ever moving him into the top two, because that's a kind of a perfect example. Like, this is a guy that I was sort of lower than everyone on, and then like I finally was like, all right, fine, he's a top two or three guy. I think that at the end of the day, it's gonna maybe look like Michael Conforto with 20 steals.
No. Okay. Well, all right. So let me ask you this: Brennan Davis or Jared Kelenic? Because you have Brennan Davis at three, my man.
So here's a sneak peek at what I've got.
I'm sorry, I have access to your list. Maybe I should.
Well,
have said that.
Well, no, that's not a sneak peek. I mean, that's live on the site. But just for the dynasty ranks, when we're factoring in the prospects with the big leaguers, I'm going to have Julio Rodriguez and Bobby Witt inside the top 20, just inside. And the next prospect isn't going to be inside my top 60. So, like, that's how big the gap is to me between Rodriguez and Witt, okay, and Davis, who I have at three, Riley Green, who I have at four. Those two to me are kind of interchangeable. But I mean, it cannot be overstated to me just how big that gap is. I know I'm sounding like a broken record on that. I actually would take Kelenic over Davis, just because, you know, I think it could very easily be a thing where Brennan Davis goes through his own like 200 plate appearance.
But so that's what, let me say this is very important. Don't buy Brennan Davis right now.
No.
buy if they are on James Anderson's top, if they're in their top 10 or James Anderson's top 20, okay, please don't try to buy them, because there's going to be a moment when they're going to come up to the major leagues and they're going to struggle. Right. They're going to. This top 20 list that is right here that ends with Nick York, with Robert Hassel, Josh Lowe, see what I did? Those guys are going to drop. Don't pay the big price for the shiny penny right now.
Yeah.
Unless, I mean, you could argue if James has Rodriguez and Witt in the top 20, maybe that's different.
I 100% co-sign what you said. I mean, like, it's bad business to trade for prospects when they're kind of at that peak of the, and that's where these guys are. If they're in the top 10, top 15, I mean, in many cases, this is going to be the peak of their value.
Yes.
And
that's a good time. That actually, you're right. And that's the time to sell them. I mean, but see, like, there's some guys I'm not going to sell. I'm not selling CJ Abrams. If I own him only in one league, he's going nowhere, nowhere, nowhere. I love him too much. Right. So you can keep them and keep growing them, but try not to buy them. Or if you're going to buy them, like, make sure it's a good deal.
Well, I don't mind a challenge trade. Like, if you have a guy who's in my top 10 and you want to go after another guy who's in my top 10, like, by all means, you know, prospect for prospect. Or if you can trade, you know, three guys in the 20 yes. to 50 range for one guy in the top 20, like, you know, well, depends how high in the top
20. And depends on who those guys are, right? Although I like the depth. I wish we weren't done, and I wish we could do like just a whole thing on all these prospects. I would love to kind of come back at some point and just go over your thinking on that. Cause really, and because of our friendship and because of our partnership, I always have had access to your prospect list. I don't change anything. I don't do anything, but I'll always like go take a look and say, all right, where's James have him? And I'm not the only, I'm far from the only one who does that. I feel like most of the industry does that. There are other great guys too, without question, not a shot at anybody. It's just, you know, you're the guy that I trust the most because I understand your thinking about these players better than anybody. And I guess I kind of want to ask you about, all these guys. Jeez,
ask me about a couple.
Yeah. All right. And then I do have to go because I got to get, Young, I get it. I mean, I get it. Look what he's doing. I guess the one question I would have for you is, you have that much faith in Corbin Carroll, even after missing a key season. And you'd have to think that before the season, I was thinking 2022 on Corbin Carroll. I love Corbin Carroll. Own him. Love him. Own him. But really, still a top 10 prospect. How do you say that when we have nothing from it?
Well, I think he would be the number three prospect with a bullet right now if he hadn't gotten hurt. Now I mean it's sort of how much do you want to hold the injury and the lack of reps against him, but just in terms of skills and makeup, I mean, he just checks every single box.
I love him so much. 16th pick.
Like, if we want to just talk about like guys who could just be absolute game changers in fantasy for speed, the guys in the top, the top 10, I mean, it's basically Abrams and Carroll.
Yeah.
Like Witt's probably going to steal 20 plus bases. Mm-hmm. But I mean, eventually
that's not the main draw, but that's what I'm looking for, James. I mean, aren't you like, I'm looking for speed. Speed is so valuable in fantasy baseball. Steals.
Yeah, and the guys who can steal 30 plus bases and help you in batting average and help you in runs and RBI and hit 20 plus homers, that's like the elite, you know.
Let me ask you, I got two players to ask you about, and then I do gotta go. And by the way, this is just what we do when we're on the phone, which was cool because we didn't have a rundown here. We're just gonna do like a phone call. We're just gonna do a phone call. The two guys I want to ask you where they are, if you don't mind sharing, Starling Marte, where you have him, and Whit Merrifield. I'm really curious about both of those guys.
Because of the age. Where do you put a guy who's 34 who is just coming off his best season in Starling Marte?
Right. 47 stolen bases and like caught like, I don't know, I think like twice. I don't know, maybe more, but not many times.
So I tentatively, I have him around 70. Would you trade? Like, I have him from a prospect standpoint, I have him right by Adley and Spencer Torkelson. And
I would trade Marte for both of those guys right now. I mean, that's the trick. I had him at 59 in September, and then he just kept stealing more bases.
I mean, this is Starling Marte and Whit Merrifield are perfect examples of what you were talking about with the ranks for rebuilders, ranks for contenders. Because I mean, that's just such a big game changer thing. Whit Merrifield, I have like 20 spots lower because this is for OBP. And traditionally, both those guys have been better in average than OBP. Marte just kind of flipped a switch this year, and now he's just a stud in everything. But the guys who rely on their speed and don't really hit for a ton of power, who are in their early to mid-30s, like, I kind of rank them low to kind of give the reader like a nudge, like, this is when you should be moving off of Starling Marte in a dynasty league.
Yeah, I get it.
This is when you should be moving off Whit Merrifield.
Whit Merrifield, who's now 32 years old, but he had 40 stolen bases, only got caught four times, 277 average. it's just a lot of 97 runs, 74 RBI. I mean, dual eligibility, second base and outfield. You know, so if we were doing a rebuild list, you got to put him in the 80s. And if you're doing a win now list, maybe you're putting him in the 30s, 40s.
I mean, you could put Starling Marte like top 35 if you're trying to win now.
I mean, if you're trying to win now, you could put Starling Marte in the top 30.
Yeah.
Top 20. I mean, he helped win leagues. 47 stolen bases, guys. That's insane.
Who would you rather have, context neutral, Whit Merrifield or Anthony Volpe?
Whit Merrifield.
Okay.
I mean, but tell me quickly why Volpe you have so high.
I just think the hit tool is a game changer, and he's showing that he can get to the power. Like, usually with guys like this, it's like a question of, are they going to get to the power? And he's kind of already showing it. But I will say this, like, here's a little, nugget on Volpe that I've sort of been thinking about for about a month, is he does kind of remind me of prospect Gavin Lux. In many ways,
yep.
In terms of just that one monster breakout year where, you know, the plate skills, the hit tool, the combination of power speed just looks kind of unassailable.
We could do a whole episode just on Gavin Lux. We could.
Now Gavin Lux is going to be a trendy guy in drafts for 2022 because of how he finished.
We'll see how he does in the we'll see if he gets playing time in the playoffs and whether he succeeds. I think that's going to be that. There's a guy back to the confidence that it matters. His lack of confidence this year really hurt him. So we'll see. But Whit Merrifield and Anthony Volpe, I still think Merrifield, because I think that, let's say I had Merrifield and someone came to try to get him and had Volpe, I have them both on this particular team. But if someone came, I would say I need a little bit more than Volpe. Maybe a pick as well, maybe like a second rounder or something. If you want the value present, the present value, because he's going to give you another 4 or 5 years of really good value. Oh, it's going to give you 2 years of really good value. And then after that, it's going to slow down a little bit, but he'll still play. And I love the dual eligibility. It's huge. That second base outfield. He held that, right? He did enough.
Yeah, he did.
I want to say that he did too. All right.
Well, Ian, before I let you go, tell people where they can find your work and where they can follow you.
So I'm over on Twitter at IanCon4. That's my fantasy baseball account. If you follow me on IanCon, you're not going to get any fantasy baseball content. So IanCon4 for fantasy baseball. And at The Athletic, Under the Radar, part of the fantasy baseball network. And we typically do our shows on Tuesdays in the offseason. We're going to do every other week for a while. Nando DeFino, Derek Van Riper, and myself. And it's fun. And it's a fun show. We have a really good time.
Yeah, I would strongly recommend listening to everything Ian does over at The Athletic.
And the Dynasty Rankings. I'm sorry, I should have said. And I also do the Dynasty Rankings over at The Athletic.
Yeah, you got to check those out. And definitely follow him on Twitter. Ian, this has been a blast. Thanks so much for joining me today. I know you're a busy guy, but this was a ton of fun.
Yeah, great. Always fun. Always fun, buddy.
This is the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast brought to you by WinBet. I will be back next week talking to Chris Welsh, previewing the Arizona Fall League, and my Dynasty ranking should be hitting the site sometime Friday.